Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hi, Chuck.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Jen. Hi, Corey.
Hi.
Hope you're feeling better.
Thank you.
Well, you can ask me just about anything you want relative to the music and the show. Certainly, I'm happy to be. Thank you for inviting you today and talk about something that really is unfair. And it's unfair to the people we care about the most, which is our fans.
Well, you go. I want to hear. Yeah. Tell me everything. I want to hear.
All right. Well, let me start with one element about the show. And I think you guys, certainly Tori and Jenny can corroborate this, Amy, is that the first five seasons that I was there, I did basically five different television shows.
Wow.
The first show was called The Walsh Family Show.
Yeah.
Second show was called High School Hijinks, as we just threw balls in the air and did 29 episodes. The third show was called Senior Year.
Yeah.
The fourth show was College.
Yep.
And the fifth show was Goodbye, Brenda. Hello, Tiffany.
Wow.
So there were five completely different television shows with the same characters, but with different vibes, different goals, different budgets. And that's where we should start on season one and two.
Okay.
We had the lowest license fee in network television being working for the Fox Broadcasting Company, which really at that point was a broadcasting service, not a network.
Yeah.
As right. I used to tease Peter Chernin a lot. Anytime we asked you to pay for something, you became a broadcast service. And anytime we did something controversial, you were a network. You know,
it was,
you know, but we did not have enough money. And you guys can remember, you know, some of the scenes that we had. We had a lot of montages and we had long scenes with very few setups, unlike, you know, your movies that you've been in or TV that had much more production value. We didn't have that. So
I had no idea. We thought you guys just liked writing those, putting those in, that it was a choice.
your father would roll his eyes every time I would say to him, Aaron, form follows function. Man, if we don't have any money, we got to do it this way. And he would, yes, Amy?
Here's my question, just so people can understand. So, like, especially since we're talking about Aaron. So compared to Dynasty, Love Boat, Fantasy Island, was 90210 like peanuts compared to those shows? Half a peanut?
Well, from a budget. Listen, first of all, I want to acknowledge to your fans that listen to your podcast week on week. This one's a little different than most of them because the business, it becomes dominant, and especially when you're talking about music, because music is not free. Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, you know, they used to call, and I'm sure you've mentioned on this show before, ABC stood for Aaron's Broadcasting Company in the years that I started in the business in 1977.
Yeah.
And moved it through to 2007. That was my run of television. But, you know, the network business was a very flush business. And Aaron, you know, was a very cost-oriented producer. He didn't like to waste money. But at the same time, when he wanted to spend it, there was really no holding him back on that.
Oh, my God. It's like me in life.
Wow. Yeah.
But you get now it. You had to get it from someone. Yeah,
exactly.
From
no, this is super interesting. Okay, keep going. So you're talking about, season one and two.
So the idea being that how would we have a production that would appeal to our core audience, which was teenagers, which was kind of a brand new thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Fox was experimenting with a lot of different things. And if you look back to what Fox had its first season, it wasn't teenage kind of stuff. It was really some high-end talent. George C. Scott, the famous actor, did a sitcom. James Brooks was there doing Tracy Ullman, which led to The Simpsons.
Was 21 Jump Street toward the beginning?
And 21 Jump Street, it's good you bring that up because I was going to bring that one up because 21 Jump Street had a lot of pop music. Oh, and they had so much pop music that they actually put the credits of what songs they were using on during the end credits.
Oh, yeah, that's sort of familiar to me.
Wait, can I ask a question? Like, back then, what were budgets? Like, what was an appropriate budget for an hour-long show? Yeah.
For whom?
For us.
No. The budget that we proposed to make for the show was was just over $1 million, and that was rejected by Duke. The person who really would talk about the budget and that. So our original license fee from Fox was about $700,000. Wow. And it was
Ally McBeal on then?
Later.
No, Ally McBeal.
That was later.
Oh, okay. Break my heart. There were two great pilots 1 year for Fox. One was written and produced by David Kelly called Ally McBeal, and the other was written and produced by me called Soulmates. And Ally McBeal won,
sorry,
and Soulmates did not get its 10-year run.
Oops.
But anyway, that's a water under the bridge.
Sorry.
Wait, since we're going there, this is very interesting. So if the network pays essentially like Spelling Productions $700,000 to make this show, do you have to make it for $500,000 to have profit?
Oh, well, the other amount that the Spelling Company put in, I even think it was lower. I think it was like closer to $500,000. But they were a smart enough company and had a big enough foreign sales that they added that money into it. And that was about 150 more. But we were $100,000 to $150,000 to $200,000 less than any other television series. The other thing that you have to remember from seasons one and two, which I know Tori and Jenny most likely remember, is that our crew was not a union crew. It was a non-union crew. And that was a real gamble, both on Fox Broadcasting Company and Spelling being a willing participant in that, to go and try to effectively make low-budget television and, in effect, break the Alliance for Television Studio Engineers, ALATSE, the below-the-line. That was the plan. And that is really the only reason that I'm talking to you both today so many years later, because Aaron could not, and Duke, they were the Spelling production. They had great relationships with unions. They did not put their name on, they could not put their name on the show. So instead, they found a company to work with, Propaganda, of course, a CAA company. And they worked together. And since Aaron couldn't put his name on, he had to find someone who would. And fortunately, he hired me. Why he hired me, by the way, is because of I did a lot of movies for television. That's how I really got by in the 80s. There were a few series, St. Elsewhere and Northern Exposure before I came to 90210. But pretty much I wrote movies for television. I wrote movies about women. I wrote movies about kids. So, and, you know, Tori, your dad, he's a complex human being, but boy, did he, can he scrutinize a problem and figure out where he would have to land? You look, you know, everybody, you go back to season one, and the older fans will remember that, where there was Ferris Bueller's Day Off and French Prince of Bel-Air and Parker Lewis Can't Lose on the Fox Broadcasting Company, which is a show that they loved, as opposed to us, they had to get used to. And there were others as well, Hull High from Disney. And Aaron looked at that lineup and went, hey, I cannot compete. They all want me to be MTV. I am not MTV. I don't know how to be MTV. I know how to be good television. And he had that in his background with a show from the 60s called Mod Squad, which was one of the few things I watched when I was a teenager. It was Mod Squad, the Smothers Brothers and Mission Impossible. Those were my three shows.
So when you say Aaron's name wasn't on the show, Aaron's name wasn't on the show?
After the first five seasons, not as an executive producer. I was the sole executive producer for two seasons.
Whoa.
In the third season, he made a deal with Darren Star to get his name as an executive producer as well. But it was front credits, not end credits. And I stayed on the show for the 2 years of college. I did 143 hours of television in five seasons. That's cramming 6.5 years of television into five seasons. Boy, would the Writers Guild like orders like that right now, huh? But we, you know, it was a very hardworking show. And I knew about two-thirds of the way, a half of the way through season five, that, and I would tell this to Karen, you know, this show is really trying to kill me, Karen. I can't do this anymore. This is the best thing that's happened to us creatively and financially, but I can't do it. I can feel that. And just too hard work, too small a staff, too many episodes. I leave the show in May, and at 43 years old, I have a heart attack in the first week of July.
Do Tori and Jenny, do you feel that way? I mean, I know you love this show, right? But do you feel like it worked you really hard?
Yes
we do. We're both nodding our heads. Yes,
but we had nothing.
It was grueling
to compare,
and we got to go home at the end of the night. You guys had to write.
There were
everything you're talking about, Chuck. Like, Jen, do you remember this about it being non-union the first two seasons?
I remember the non-union now that he's bringing it up, definitely, because that was a big hubbub around when the show decided to go union.
I can't remember that part. I remember the propaganda. I'm like, oh, is that where that they came in?
Yes, and it was a very big thing. You guys were waiting in the wings when they were having their meeting and to vote. And, you know, they were having the conversation among themselves, and the only people in the room who weren't union were myself and Paul Wagner, who had just come on as the line producer at that point. And and Shannon had actually taken the microphone and urged everybody to go on strike, that they deserved more money, that they didn't, these hours were too long, blah, 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 blah. And I got on the mic and said, well, you know, just realize that we are a terribly low rated show. We've only had two or three episodes airing by that point, even though they were really good. Hello, but we were low aired. So what did it matter? And I said, if you vote to strike, I can't guarantee that we'll be working tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And we won by one vote.
Whoa.
Only one vote did they come back to work. You cut to season two and they decide to try to go on strike again. and go on, become a union television show. And I remember Paul Wagner, my dear friend and really my production partner in all of this, saying to them, look, if you go union, that means that we can hire anybody we want for any job.
Right, we're not
strict to that. And they passed it by one. It passed by one. And the next year that came back, your friend, you guys' friends, remember that he was such a nice guy. And I know his Eric Lopez. Eric Lopez,
yeah,
the golfer. And Jason's good friend. He was, if you remember, from seasons 2 to 3, he was the only one who was brought back. And I think it was because he was Jason's golf partner, tell you the truth.
Oh my God. We all love
him. Everybody loved him. He hung out with you guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have another question for you, Chuck. So, two. So as shows go, and we're talking season one-ish before it blew up that summer, right?
Sure.
Were they, Tori, Jenny, the whole cast, paid significantly lower than, say, 21 Jump Street when they started? Like,
oh, I'm sorry. I don't know that. They were being paid lower than had the show been on ABC
CBS.
I can't judge from the other, but I did know, since you brought up Jump Street, and since I know the focus on this is music, that we knew that if we did some music and we had the propaganda people, and let's understand something about propaganda. They were the hippest people in town. They were doing all the music videos for Madonna. They had the great director, David Fincher, under contract. Mm. They had Michael Bay under contract. They were doing Twin Peaks, the production.
Right.
So come on, they were really something else. And they had brought us some people to say, these people know what the hip songs are and you can license them and they'll be your company.
Hey, everyone. So as you can imagine, we know a thing or two about makeup. We've pretty much tried it all.
And we are really liking Thrive Cosmetics because they have a full line of makeup perfect for an everyday look refresh.
They have clean ingredients that feel great on your skin. And their products are foolproof, which makes it easy for any skill level to apply.
And it's really cool to know that Thrive Cosmetics donates products and funds to help communities thrive.
Oh, I love that connection. See that? Plus, how cool is it that their high-performance formulas are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free?
Amazing. And they have zero parabens, sulfates, and phthalates.
I really believe when it comes to makeup, beautiful eyebrows are so important. Don't you think? Their Infinity Waterproof Eyebrow Liner helps you achieve your ideal eyebrow look.
And their easy-to-use waterproof pencil holds like a wax and blends like a powder.
Ooh la la. Refresh your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back.
Right now, you can get an exclusive 10% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/90210.
That's Thrive Cosmetics. CAUSEMETICS.com/90210 for 10% off your first order.
Want to temporarily restore definition in your jawline where it's been lost over time? With Juvederm Volux XC, you can get a non-surgical jawline treatment that adds volume for a smooth contour and to reduce the appearance of jowls in one in-office treatment with little downtime. Juvederm Volux XC injectable gel is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
With the weather getting warmer, finally, it is time for a wardrobe refresh.
And when I want to update my style without breaking the bank, I turn to Quince.
They offer premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30.
And washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more.
The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
They partner directly with top factories, so Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you.
Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that.
I use the hoop earrings I ordered from Quince all the time.
And basically live in the slippers that I ordered on their website. The prices and quality are so worth it.
Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/90210 for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/90210 to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/90210.
Before you start talking about this 60s episode that we really want to talk about, you know how you describe like your year, your time on the show, the how it was five different seasons. Do yes. you have a favorite of those, of the different incarnations, the Walsh family, the high school years, senior year, college, the Tiffany years? Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, well, yeah, there was, you know, sure I do. But I love, they're all my children. I love them all. And I love things that you all did in them. You know, mm-hmm. it's you know, some episodes worked better than others and this. But I, again, go back to this. I was hired to do, basically, bring a movie of the week sensibility, exploring teen issues.
Yeah.
And we were in for a big surprise. When Darren Star and I and our staff turned in our first proposal for the first six episodes, and they were all rejected.
Wow.
Every single one of them rejected because they did not want a serialized television show. They wanted individual episodes that each had a beginning, middle, and end, which at that point was because it was better for syndication.
Right.
You know, the soaps... And I'm sure this came from, you know, the experience that your dad had with Dynasty and the others just didn't play as well when it wasn't right, first run. Right. And by the way, that was what 90210 didn't play as well when it wasn't first run. So because of that, Barry Diller said, let's bring them back in the summer. Let's do 28 episodes. Let's just do more and more because the kids want to watch new material. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to watch repeats. And so that was, you know.
He still avoided my question there. Which
is, he said he can't pick. He can't pick.
Do you? Because I would say right now with the episodes we're in, because we just talked about divas. I mean, it is thriving right now. Like, I love.
Season four.
I love it. So, yeah. So to me, this is like season one was not my favorite. And then it's just gotten better and better. Did you feel like it was because everyone was firing in all cylinders? You guys just finally knew exactly what the show was. Like, can you pick?
My favorite season is season three, senior year, by far.
Okay.
This is a high school series, and that's how I perceive it. And okay. I'm really glad that you liked things in season four. The fact is that... we were blown away by the divas, the three episode arc of it. It was and you know, I'm sitting here talking, and because I consider Jenny a friend, I can say, okay, here we do. We put Jenny. Nobody says, look what you did to Kelly Taylor, especially after I left. They made her go through this hassle and this sort
like
of
a hot mess. You stuff. Left me. Look what they did.
I did. They did. Not Charlie. Charlie didn't do that. They did that. But the fact of the matter is that when we wrote, you know, okay, Kelly Taylor is going to go on and be the lead of a Tennessee Williams play. I didn't know if you could do that, Jenny. You didn't come to my office. Jenny, would you like to do Tennessee Williams? I didn't function that way. It was like, we're going to do it. It'll work. We'll cut her out. But the great performances by you, Shannon, and Tracy Middendorf.
I agree.
I mean, they were some of the things. And by the way, when I, and people who know the podcast that I do with Pete, we often talk about that. We were just astounded that Shannon found her in season four, found her sea legs.
Yes.
And she found it starting with the Time Has Come Today and then through Divas and then through the end. She reconnected with the character that she had was so ambivalent about.
Yeah.
You know, how can you play the part Brenda when you know that there's a bunch of people out there for whatever reason saying, I hate Brenda. And you're Brenda.
But what they said that I hate Kelly and Jenny played it.
No, not like it wasn't organized in the same way. That was a thing, and it was double. I mean, we had this argument. I think Tori certainly will remember this. Jenny, you might, but A Current Affair was on every night at 7 o'clock. We'd come on at 8, other shows would come on at 8, hosted by Bill Riley. And Bill Riley went after Shannon every week, whatever he could, he would. And it was the only time I ever called the president and said, back off. What are you doing?
Really?
You have this guy. And then the other one, which was great about season one, you know, season one, that one of the reasons, Amy, that you like season four so much more than number one. Number one, I had to battle. I had to have conversations with censors. We're talking about high school kids. And that was what, you know, the focus was. So what they would say, what they would do was really part of the gestalt of it. But but I, you know, I loved the senior year because I thought that really had season two was the hardest season for me of the five because it wasn't in real time. You know, when you're in high school, you know, most kids are talking about when they get to what was my SAT score? What college am I this and this? And that was, and we started that out. And I personally, just because of my nature of writing movies for television, I particularly liked episodes that were not serialized. Movies having an end. So
interesting. I mean, I love the serial. I could talk to you all day because this is so fascinating. I love the serial aspect of the show.
Well, let you talk to iHeartRadio. Let's just talk all day. That's fine with me.
But
I'm
also
tired.
Love
I don't do anything.
Like, Jenny and Ian and I had a fascinating conversation in the last week or whatever about that episode when he outs Mike Ryan and just how, even though it's dated a little bit, it still feels so current and the issues and addressing abortion with Andrea. And it's just like, you guys were so ahead of your time in leaning into these.
You know what's number one in that? And it's really crazy because I didn't know, you know, I didn't watch most. I put these episodes on. I'd watch them every night when they were on live and then I put them away. And so I didn't really watch a lot of the episodes for a lot of years and then, you know, started getting back to it. But our second episode, which was a female-centric episode. And it was, because that's what we had to do then. Season one, one for Brandon, one for Brenda. Brandon, one for Brenda. One for Brandon. Oops, one for Kelly. Which was perfect mom. And that changed it all up, believe me. And really the only two, she had that one. And then, of course, Dylan got his breakthrough with Isn't It Romantic, the AIDS episode. Mm. And Tori, yours came along a little later, but still in season one with the SAT and the idea of a learning disability. Mm-hmm. The fact that a show is, you know, so a show could be dated, right? We're talking about these shows that we made 30 years ago. And that's going to be really part of my argument about why the music has to be restored. But nonetheless, the second episode we did was Every Dream Has Its Price Tag. And it was about shoplifting.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, you will hear dialogue spoken just perfectly natural and in the time about white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
That to me was, how do we know to do that? Well, the writer was into that. She wrote it. And Amy Spies. And so it was that. But we had all of these issues. And Aaron thrived on it. He loved this part of the show. He wanted this. It was his vision. So when we finally connected after with the Gulf War and our shows came back, and all of a sudden we were getting 750,000 viewers more a night, he was thrilled with it. And I really loved the first year and the second year, because that's when I really got the chance to work with your dad, Tori. After that, he got so busy. He wanted so many shows. You know, he's your father. You know the man so much better than I did, but what motivated him, what he wanted. And I just lost my access to him. I mean, when we were the only show that was there, he and I were on the same floor in the same building. I'd walk down, we'd hang out. We talk about the things. I remember very clearly when he said to me, you know, with Donna, you know, that Donna should be a virgin. And it was like, yes, absolutely she should.
So that was his idea?
Was that your idea or his idea?
Not mine. I never knew where it came from. I always suspected, and people say like he kept his daughter a virgin, but was it literally his idea?
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, the entire first writing staff just went, yeah, that's I think it was the second writing staff, it was the Wassermans and I. We just went, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. Because we were able now to differentiate yourself. And what I loved about it, I watched an episode yesterday, the one where not my favorite in season one, but surprisingly holds up well, where an old boyfriend comes back into Cindy's life.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. That's a
and,
good one.
And yes, yeah, so
the 17-year
itch. Adult themed one.
Yeah, and, that's a good one.
And you know, seeing that and seeing, you know, you would be dressed, you know, provocatively, stylishly, but you know, a girl and so, but it didn't matter, because certainly if you were for whatever reason a virgin at that point, you could dress like that. You just, you know, would blend in, but not actually be doing the deed, as it were. So, you know, it was, so I really did miss that aspect of it. And I think that part of the problems that we had with our music and losing our music in the way we did had to do with the fact of how much was on the company's plate at that point, how much time had elapsed, and that neither Darren or I were around to, make a case.
Whose idea was it to do a 60s flashback show?
Mine.
That's why you don't like that I didn't like it.
It wasn't just you that didn't like it. None of us were really crazy about that episode.
Well, I'm going to go more to the quick on this, Amy. And this is not a criticism of the three of you or anyone, iHeartRadio or anybody else's names are up here in this. You're not watching the television show I made.
Right.
So, of course you didn't watch it. Here's what songs, let me just go through something. Here's what songs you didn't hear on this episode that you didn't like. Monday by the Mom, and I'm talking about now, we're talking about the soundtrack.
And were these in the original airing?
Yes, these were the original airing. This was the second most music that we had in the entire 5 years I did the show. The only show that had more music licensed was Commencement, and that in season three, our graduation episode, and that was a 2-hour episode. This was
that's an amazing, brilliant, perfection episode.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
Sorry, I still don't like this one.
Well, I still I'm going to send you, I'm going to have Pete send you the episode, and you're going to hear it with the music.
Ooh.
But keep explaining the music, because I'll still give my argument why I don't love it. But go.
Okay,
you go.
Well, you can.
And sorry, Tori and Jenny, I'm sorry, I'm freaking out. This is such a fascinating, this is like, should be a college class to me. Like,
yeah, well, you're passionate about it. I like that.
I taught in college, so I know those classes.
I took classes like this, and I would, if I could have taken this class or take it now, Oh my God. I would go back to school for this class.
Yeah, what? But Berkeley wouldn't carry it. They would tell you have to go to UCLA, Amy. Anyway, Woodstock, it opened with Joni Mitchell singing Woodstock. Mamas and Papas doing Monday Money on the Jukebox. These Boots Are Making for Walking by Nancy Sinatra, yep. which was the song. There were two songs in the 60s that had to do with the soldiers. And that was one of them. And the other was I Ain't No Fortunate Son. Or Bad Moon Rising was also. Any guy who served in Vietnam hears that song and back in the fields. So anyway, we had For What It's Worth with the Buffalo Springfield on the radio. We had the coolest song that really catches the 60s for your audience to write this one down. It's called Reach It Out in the Darkness. And it's I think it's so groovy now that people are finally getting together. That was the number one teeny bopper 60s song of the time. Everybody Get Together by the Love Youngbloods. Piece, you know, Chance. Time Has Come Today, which was the psychedelic song, and many people probably took their, not Charlie, but many people probably took their psychedelic trips on that. I was not a partake in psychedelics, by the way, because I was fearful that I would lose my mind, so I never did that.
But same, that, don't song. You, same, a lot of same over here.
We had Where You Love by Kevin by Donovan. We had All We Are Saying Is Give Peace a Chance by John and Yoko.
God, that was all, this is expensive music.
And then we had the last thing, one of the most beautiful songs. It's a Dylan song. We had it by Richie Havens saying, The Times They Are Changing, which is when Brenda drives and meets the woman who wrote, had the diary.
Right.
By Richie Havens. You didn't hear one of those songs. So it's pretty hard for you to see where the music supported the dramaturgy and the two connected and were very much. And this happens, you know, the stuff that CBS puts out there and people watch is a lesser product. It's not the show that I made with your father. And I made that argument to David Staff at CBS. I made that argument to the National Academy of Television. I made that argument again and again and again to episodes by people by CBS. And the response, and this one is really going to infuriate you, especially you, Jenny, is when I really finally, I had a good agent, you know, who I didn't for a long years, but an old agent of mine became a very powerful agent. And when I said I wanted to talk to somebody at CBS on the distribution side, because they keep saying no to these reasonable proposals. And I talked to a guy, I'm going to let his name out of it, but he's the man who claims that he told Paramount to buy Spelling Entertainment. And he's the man who told me when I talked about all this music and all this stuff and that how our loyal fans are, et cetera, et cetera. He said, yeah, but it's too bad none of your stars really are big. Mm. And 1 week later, Luke Perry died.
Oh.
1 week later from that conversation, where the whole world stops to remember our brother in arms, our friend, our lover, our the soul of this television show. And this is and that doesn't jive with the corporate mentality on looking at an issue that is a money issue. And I kept trying to go back to them and say, let's just take 20 shows from high school. Let's just take 12 shows from high school. Because what it matters of those three seasons, just pick them so that the audience can understand what was about this show. You watch the original episodes of this show with the 90s in order, not thrown out the way that they do and decide not to show them. And you realize that you are watching a documentary about what life was like in the 90s.
Yeah,
that's what
yeah.
mattered to me. You know, when I did went into television, when I went in, first news and then television, I did that instead of becoming a history professor, which is what I wanted to be part of me. And was actually accepted to University of Texas to do that program and be part of that. And so here we create this show that is a direct reflection of the 90s. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody to see it. There's no way to see it because CBS won't take 20 episodes, 14 episodes. I don't care how many episodes, and donate them to UCLA or Wisconsin and let our fans know that it's going to be there. So what's going to happen? I've got all the ones I've got, and my heirs will be instructed when they read my will to just let them all, put them all out on the internet.
Enter to win a free cruise for two on board the 90s cruise. Relive the magic of the iconic pop culture, music, and fashion of the 90s on the 90s cruise.
5 days of concerts with some of the decade's most iconic stars, nightly theme parties, celebrity interaction, and all-out 90s events and activities.
Over 25 concerts and live performances starring Blues Traveler, Collective Soul, Gin Blossoms, Everclear, Lit, Color Me Bad, Lisa Loeb, Fastball, CNC Music Factory, Jesus Jones, Digital Underground, Sophie B. Hawkins, and more.
Hosted by MTV VJs Downtown Julie Brown and Matt Pinfield, plus Lisa Loeb.
Royal Caribbean's Serenade of the Seas will be completely transformed to take you back in time for nonstop 90s action. The 90s cruise will sail from Tampa and head to Cozumel and Costa Maya, Mexico, January 31st through February 5th, 2025.
Head to the90scruise.com/iHeart to enter to win a free cruise for two.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. Mm-hmm. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Because there's nothing like a weekend pause with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
So in layman's terms, just kindergarten explanation, the reason, so the first airing, it had all that music. And then the reason it doesn't now is just purely because it would be too expensive to continue to license the music in those episodes. What's the kindergarten explanation?
That is a good question. That is the question. Why did they do this? And one of the reasons that they did it, there are a couple, and I don't want to get into some of them because I just don't in this forum. I'll tell the four of you that when we're not being recorded, if you don't mind, if you understand, I want to protect people's feelings and things like that. Mm-hmm. But the fact—
Oh, don't protect our feelings. We're fine.
Not us.
We have no feelings.
Pretty much. Yes, I understand at a certain point. The television had always gone, it was interesting. What really bothers me about the television industry, and I compare this to music and film. Mm-hmm. In music, working with the federal government and the Library of Congress, they have the all the great tunes that they add 30 pieces of music to it. And they say, these are the great songs that were written in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. They do the same thing with film. Hello, the American Film Institute. Television doesn't do this. Mm-hmm. Television is about the quick hit. We're popular. We're hot. We're making money. God bless the world. Mm-hmm. And so when they get to a point when the business starts to change, people get real worried. In the late 80s, right before Fox started. Fox started in 1989, and they started because they knew that network television was in decline. They could see there was a way there that what had been for all of those years wasn't going to be happening in the same way. Well, the same at the end of the 90s. What we had was HBO and Showtime, and that's where the heat was. The heat was not on network anymore, and the networks didn't, how are we going to do our stuff? What are we going to do? And so what happened also during this period in the late 90s is Napster.
Oh, yeah.
And what Napster did was take away a huge profit zone from the recording industry. And they decided that the way they were going to get it back was to charge much more to the television people.
Oh, really?
And that's what happened. You know, interestingly enough, as you know, the show that I did after 90210 was I did Dawson's Creek for one season. And I was not really very much of a creative producer on that one, all things being truthful. But I was a bit used to the business stuff that I had learned. And I had worked for the president of Warner's, who basically said, we're not going to pay that much for our music anymore. We're paying way too much. Why should we pay so much if we're giving them an opportunity to get the promotion? Why should we do that? And that was Bob Daly. And that's who I felt I worked for, even though I was Sony.
That makes sense.
Absolutely. But the thing was, is that you were paying... No matter what you were paying for a song you wanted, a song you went after. And there was something about what gets me a little bit and where I think the Spelling Company is complicit in this one area is that those first people from Propaganda only bought our music for two airings.
Got it.
Because nobody believed the show was going to last. So they only did two airings.
So is that the difference between like a show like Grey's Anatomy that has so much amazing music is because they're licensing it in perpetuity or something from the beginning?
Correct, Amy. Okay. And then what happened after that, instead of Spelling went in, Kenny Miller, who was really, was so important to me while I was making the show. I was as close to Kenny as I was to Paul. And yet after I left the show, it was Kenny who supervised stripping all the music away.
Really?
Yeah. And he worked for the company. He had to do what the company told him to do. Yeah. But he never told me that was going on or that it was be doing. But be that as it may, the music itself that was there were songs that we had made a deal with. That was acceptable to the seller. So, you know, some of the songs, for instance, when you think of season two, Losing My Religion, R.E.M., Other Side of Summer, Elvis Costello, Wicked Game, Chris Isaak, Happy Shiny People, R.E.M.
Huge songs.
Friends in Low Places, Garth Brooks.
Oh my God.
And then moving forward, Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover. Mm-hmm. Why? Kathy Dennis from Prom that night. Blood Is Thicker Than Water, and Mia Mori from Color Me Bad.
So this
were songs that we paid for. We did it. When I came to CBS, I thought, okay, let's just double the price of it, and they'll do that. Mm-hmm. But they did. They wouldn't. So the idea of saying to all 298 episodes, forget about it.
Right.
And that's when I picked working with Darren Martin, Sarah Page Hall. you know, all, some of our real, real super friends and fans who may be listening as we speak to help me select what episodes to use. And these were the ones that I just wanted preserved, some of which had good music to it too. For instance, if you were going to do a music-centric episode, you'd have to do Fame Is Where You Find It, because there's Brenda doing Laverne,
right,
and you guys doing that, you know, It's My Party, and whatever else was being done, all the fun stuff that was there. But the episodes that we looked at, the 22 episodes we asked them to put away, was the first time. Darren, and you need me to describe what the episodes were?
Well, wait, so here's what I have to tell you. I screwed up because I've been asking so many questions that we ran out of time. So can we have you back again in a couple weeks to continue this conversation? Because we have
I probably won't be as nice.
That's okay. That's okay. You can, that's okay. You're in a good mood today. So can we continue? We're going to do a part two of this because it is so fascinating. Can
There's
we have
a lot
you back?
Of stuff, and it is very different for your audience. So I appreciate your patience.
No, I love it. And I do want to get into, I think the music would have improved the 60s episode, but I still want to debate.
Yes, for sure.
I have a question, Amy. I don't even know if you can remember, but when you watched it the first time through, do you remember liking this episode when it had the original music back in the day?
The episode is like it didn't exist.
See, this one stands out so much to me, but it's because of the wardrobe, I think, that we got to wear it. So that's how I remember it originally.
And the music, I mean, the reason that we're talking about any of this is because the music is just as important to this, the storytelling as any of the other elements of the show.
And we needed it. And we did it. And we put it together. And without it, what you're saying to the fan, the fans, when I come back, I will read you what our fans wrote about what they write about not having the music there.
Yeah, yeah. We get a lot of comments.
Because this is about the fans.
Yeah.
And if we, and by the way, it's about one other thing too. Minor. This is very minor, and I know you got to go, but this is I would like my grandchildren to profit from the hard work that I made. I am a profit participant on this show. That's why I can be retired and live in Venice Beach, and I God bless the giving tree. Yes, I do. Thank you for all. You know, as I remember the day that Mr. Spelling, when he decided that the Bachman is head of business affairs, kept running in and saying to him, Aaron, are you sure you want to pay him this amount? If you pay him this, this is for the rest of his life. And your dad, did you quote your dad on this story? He said, I like his wife and kids.
I get it, though. If you create something, it's like taking a book and changing the middle pages.
It's just this really fundamental lack of disrespect. Yeah. And they didn't make the show.
Yeah, I get
that. Paramount did the same thing to Happy Days. They did it to...
I mean, beyond the profit sharing of it all, which it strikes a little trigger in me, I'm going to move past that. And I'm going to say it's really about preserving an iconic show that deserves it.
And I just said, just take a sliver of it. Start with this. See how it does. And beg them to become the industry leaders. And if anybody knows the book Unscripted by James B. Stewart... you should read it. It's about Sumner Redstone and Les Moonves, and you'll understand where the money went.
Well, we're going to continue this for sure. I'll email you and we'll have you back in 2 weeks because I want to talk more about this. It's really interesting.
Well, I just like...
You're so knowledgeable. We miss this sort of voice on our show because our show is not really...
You're to that.
Isn't the temperature of our show usually, and you understand that. We have a lot more fun with it
instead of getting
to all the details. But... to each their own, but we really appreciate when you come on and you give us this insight and all the real
dirt. Thank you. And I like coming on because I get to be with both of you and you two.
Amy,
yes.
These two I spend a lot of time with.
It's always the best to see you. Always the best.
I have a load more questions. Thank you for
inviting me. I know, me too.
Okay.
Love you. Love to Karen.
We'll talk to you soon.
We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7. Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Enter to win a free cruise for two on board the 90s cruise. Relive the magic of the iconic pop culture, music, and fashion of the 90s on the first ever sailing.
5 days of concerts with some of the decade's most iconic stars, nightly theme parties, celebrity interactions, and all-out 90s activities.
There'll be over 25 concerts and live performances starring Blues Traveler, Collective Soul, Gin Blossoms, Everclear, Lit, and more.
The 90s cruise will sail from Tampa and head to Cozumel and Costa Maya, Mexico on Royal Caribbean's Serenade of the Seas, January 31st through February 5th, 2025.
Head to the90scruise.com/iHeart to enter to win a free cruise for two.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.